Morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Talk about the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, folks, this is it. This is the last show of 2025. It's hard for me to think about that. It's been a very full and fruitful year. So we're going to talk about a very great article about how cars keep us connected with our past and also our present and even our future. So it's a very good article out of the pages of the Drive website. We'll also talk about what's going on, any updates on Greg Biffle and the airplane crash that took his life and six other friends and his entire family. We've got an update on what's happening with Car Week starting in January 17th. Lots of big car auctions and events to talk about. Of course, we'll talk about gas prices. Of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, from the pages of the Drive website, this is an article written by Joel Fetter, and it says, "Cars keep us connected. Cars are sometimes the glue that bonds us together with the past, the present, and into the future." Well, a cold tingling sensation shot down my back, and it was no random chill. Suddenly I sensed him. I wasn't alone in the blue-on-blue 1990 Nissan 300ZX as I headed to my wedding. My uncle, Unc, who had died 14 years earlier, made sure that he knew he was there for me on my big day. Now, cars get us from point A to point B. They also get people out of bed early on the weekends for cars and coffee and gatherings and provide space to think about life through going through destinationless cruises, putting people together that bond on road trips, foster communities while creating relationships. They also can be a canvas for creativity. Now, my world revolves around cars and the automotive community, and they're my job and they're my hobby. And I was born into the car world. My father was a car enthusiast. My uncles were car enthusiasts. My grandfather appreciated cars. Even my grandmother had strong opinions on cars. Cars are hard-coded into the Fetter DNA. While growing up with my family, I was involved in the Jewish community, and still am. As a kid, I felt like I was going through the motions of religion and fought it at every turn, whether it was attending religious schools or prepping for my bar mitzvah. It wasn't really until my mid-20s that it became clear that Judaism had played a larger role in my life than I ever had imagined. And from community and rituals to morals and ethics, I embraced it. But I never truly knew if those who had loved us passed on checked in on us. How would you? So it's fitting that I would discover the answer to this question through cars. Now, my uncle, Robert Fetter, was only 5'6", but was larger than life. He was the stuff of family legend. I remember sitting on the back of the family boat, my Unc's brother, Jerry, behind the wheel, Unc strapped to two white wooden boards called water skis with his back facing the rear of the boat. His butt was in the air and his arms were behind him holding the water ski rope. Uncle Jerry hit the throttle. Unc popped up onto the water skis backwards, cementing his legendary status in this boy's eyes. Now, as the oldest of four kids, Unc had it the roughest. Grandpa Paul and my grandmother Betty, known to us as Noni, didn't have a lot of money when they were younger. And anything that Uncle would want, he'd have to save up and buy for himself. But he had the grit and the craftiness to do that. Uncle Jerry once told me that Unc raised guppies for pocket money when they were young. Unc was a successful civil rights attorney in Fargo, North Dakota, after leaving the Justice Department in Washington, D.C. While living in Washington, D.C., he zipped around town in a Honda motorcycle to avoid traffic, and rather than drive his white two-door Plymouth Sport Fury convertible with a blue interior. At one point in time, Uncle had a terrible accident, was all busted up, according to my Uncle Jerry. My grandfather flew out to D.C., but Noni went ballistic and told Unc to get rid of that motorcycle. Well, instead, in true Unc fashion, he staged a photo shoot standing next to his motorcycle, wearing a Superman tank top, white striped pants, and motorcycle boots, and he held a motorcycle helmet in one hand, said, "Happy birthday, Mother," with a sign attached to the broom in the other hand. He sent the photo to Noni for her birthday. She had it enlarged and framed. It hung in her wood-paneled basement at the base of the stairs my entire childhood. Now it hangs in the basement of my own home. Now, during my childhood, Unc's daily driver was a blue-on-blue first-generation Nissan Pathfinder with manual transmission. But his toy was a blue-on-blue 1990 Nissan 300ZX 2 Plus 2. The Z was his baby. People would just crack jokes about him that he was washing it with a diaper. He was neurotic about this stuff, just like my Uncle Jerry, my father, and myself. It runs in the family. I remember as a child climbing into the small bucket seats in the back of the 300Z early on Saturday mornings at the family cottage on Lake Messina and in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. If I shut the door too hard, Unc would make me open it again and say, "Close it nicely." We'd go on a little convenience store down the road in Shoreham, and he would buy a pack of wooden-tipped Swisher Sweets, a Fargo Forum newspaper for Noni, a pack of candy cigarettes for me because I like to be cool like Unc, who smoked cigars. Looking back, those candy cigars tasted like chalk. Now, Unc was a sailor, and I don't remember the blue and white Hobie Cat 16 he raced, but I do remember the Holder 20 fiberglass sailboat that was white with blue and purple stripes with teak wood trim. The man liked to teach and make me think. Ask Unc a question, he wouldn't just give me an answer. Instead, he would make me figure it out to ensure that I was challenged in learning. I was 11 when Unc died of cancer in his lower spine. The last time I saw him alive was in the hospital bed in his bedroom. He was in pain. I went out on the cement front stoop, grabbed the black wrought iron railing, and cried. I screamed too. I cried some more. At 11, I didn't understand. He was only 54. He was Superman. He was Unc. It was overwhelming. Cancer won. Unc died. Kryptonite. His 300ZX sat covered in storage for much of the next 11 years, as my Aunt Jane felt it was a huge responsibility to take care of it to Unc's standards. In 2008, my dad and I became the caretakers of the 300Z. I couldn't have tried to get any number of vehicles to drive on the day of the wedding, but there was only one, Unc's Z. It was about 10 a.m. on Sunday, August 28th, 2011. I was in an underground garage of the retirement home where Unc's Z sat. It was waiting under a bedsheet. I had spent countless hours detailing it. There couldn't be a speck of dust on it. It had to shine like it was the only physical connection I had to Unc on the day of my wedding. I turned the key to fire up the 3-liter V6 to life. Moments later, I took her out onto Highway 7, St. Louis Park, Minnesota, and pointed the Z toward the synagogue. Before I crossed Highway 169, a cold, tingling sensation shot down my back. It was Unc. It had been 14 years since Unc died, but he was in that car with me. He wanted me to know he was with us for this occasion. He knew I chose his car for my wedding day. As quickly as he came into the Z to check in, he left. Suddenly, the car felt empty again. What was a momentary warm interior was suddenly cold and lonely. But I couldn't stop smiling. It's weird. Nothing like this has happened to me before. It made me happy. I felt that if Unc was proud of me, that his car was a part of my wedding. Unc's presence could also be felt at the family cottage. For years, the jet skis and the jet boat and Aunt Jan were parked at the dock next door. My dad still had his yellow Hobie Cat 16 named Bankshot that he used to race with Unc. Aunt Jane was with Unc's favorite seasoned bagel chips in the pantry. As hard as it was to accept that Unc wasn't around anymore, it was good to feel his presence at the lake. For years, I questioned myself if Uncle really visited me in that car. Now, then, it happened again. Noni says it's okay. Well, growing up, I was extremely close with my father and my uncle's mother, Betty. Noni, as we called her. Life to Noni wasn't black and white. It was blue. her parents, Max and Anner, gave her a star sapphire ring as a graduation gift. She got married, she took the sapphire out of the ring and placed the ring in a ring for my grandfather. Blue soon became the Federer's color. Her cars were blue, her boats were blue, her dresses were mostly blue, even her dishes were blue. She was a pillar of the community, a tireless volunteer who donated her time. She was the president of the Arthritis Foundation. She was the first woman and a non-physician to serve on the national board. She also gave her time to serve as the president of the Minnesota State University and Moorhead Foundation and on the board of the National Federation of Temple Sisters. Noni was a certified by the Library of Congress to record textbooks for blind children in North Dakota's public schools. I was in middle school, and Noni and I were in her blue sapphire 1991 Mercedes-Benz 350 SLD on the way to pick up my friend, Mark, for a play date. As we passed the Knollwood Mall on Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, I asked her, "How old was Grandpa when he died?" "He was 72, dear. Why?" And she's responded, "Everyone was dear to Noni." Naturally, my next question was, "How old was she?" She was in her mid-70s. I gasped and said, "Noni, you could drop dead any minute." She busted out laughing, and from that moment on, Noni and her second youngest grandchild were about dropping dead any minute. Now, Unc was Noni's oldest son, and there was no question as to why Unc's car was blue. Noni's last vehicle was a 2001 Audi A6 4.2 liter ordered in Ming blue, with a vanilla and blue interior completed by walnut wood trim. She ordered the 4.2 liter V8 because it was the only way to get the motorized steering column. A color combination was a lot for the eyes to take in. In the spring of 2000, I was with Noni, Uncle Jerry, and my dad at Valley Imports in Fargo, North Dakota, when she ordered the A6. "Noni, what are you doing? That color combination, we're going to have to try to sell this car when you're dead someday," I said. "You'll see, dear. It's gorgeous," as she responded in true Noni fashion. I'll admit, the color combination grew on me, but it took years after Noni was gone. Noni died in 2012 at the age of 92, and I felt like someone hit the pause button on the world. The local Fargo news station ran a segment about Noni's passing. It felt surreal that she was gone. My father and my Uncle Jerry asked me to help her sell the A6, and I flashed back to that conversation at Valley Import in 2000, and I knew this would happen. Like any 12-year-old Audi, it had a long list of maintenance, from control arms to valve covers to timing belt to water pump. The bill was going to be supersized. My wife Karen ended up with Noni's A6 as her daily driver. And in February 2013, after undergoing an exhaustive maintenance list, the car finally arrived at our house in Portland, Oregon. Seeing it in our driveway had me conflicted. On one hand, Noni's car was staying in the family, and it was now part of our daily life. On the other hand, it was a constant reminder that Noni was gone, the hole she left in this world. The interior has still been gorgeous. The button battery that Noni had was still in the ashtray, and I left it there. March 4th, 2013, Karen drove Noni A6 to work as her daily driver for the first time. She parked it on an in spot away from all the other cars and trees. Then she posted a photo to Facebook, tagged me to prove it. I was proud of her for respecting the car and its importance to me. Just before 8 a.m. on March 9th, 2013, while behind the wheel of Noni's A6, it happened a second time. I was headed to see friends at a Portland Cars and Coffee. As I merged onto Highway 217 from Highway 26, a cold, tingling sensation shot down my back. Noni was in the car with me. I could sense her speaking to me. She said everything was all right, and she was happy that we chose to keep the car and was going to be Karen's daily driver. She told me that she loved me. As quickly as she had joined me in the car was suddenly cold and empty. I nearly pulled over as I began to cry. I felt so alone in the blue A6 with its vanilla interior. I missed Noni dearly. Well, the A6 as Karen's daily driver until April 2019, when it finally came time to move on. Our kids were bigger. It was getting harder for our son to get in and out of the back sport bucket seats with his rear-facing car seat. Karen wanted a car with built-in Bluetooth, a cup holder that would hold more than a can of Coke, and perhaps the repair bills averaged $1,500 per issue. I wasn't really sure if I was ready to part with it. I still questioned the decision, but it made logical sense. I never listed the A6 publicly. A longtime college friend got wind that I might be selling the car and offered to buy it. He kept it for a few years along with the battery button in the ashtray until he moved to Utah and no longer made sense for this car. I'm told it now lives with the new owner in St. Cloud, Minnesota, who's always dreamed of owning a V8-powered C5 Audi A6. Well, Unks Z now lives in my garage, and I get to see it on a daily basis. It makes me smile. It makes my kids smile. Unks toolkit still sits with a deck of cards and the rear hatch. His maintenance notebook still lives in the glove box. Unk and Noni haven't come back to check in on me lately, but I know that they're watching over us. Every time I slide into the car, put the key in the Z's ignition, hear the injectors fire, I look at the blue Z sitting in my garage, or I see Ming Blue C5 A6 on the road again. Last week we talked about the terrible tragedy of Greg Biffle, his friends and family dying in a plane crash. The latest information that I've found online has some information from the voice conversations with the tower, and they were definitely having issues with the airplane. They did not declare an official mayday, but they did declare a need to return to the airport immediately and land as they were having issues with the car. One of the biggest things that I've learned since last week when we first talked about this story and I first brought it to your attention was the fact that there was only one pilot on board that had the certification to be flying the Cessna 550. He's a former airline pilot with 40 years worth of experience. It was also a situation where his son was a pilot as well, had just gotten his instruments ratings. And from what we can hear on the cockpit conversations with the tower, it sounds like that the son was flying in the right seat as the co-pilot, potentially while dad was the pilot himself. So it's going to take a while before we get all the final details to what happened in this horrific crash. But they were definitely dealing with some kind of mechanical issue on the airplane. I've read and listened to a lot of conversations about this airplane, and there have been some issues with the Cessna Citation 550 with some control surfaces and some potential problems that caused another accident as well. So it's going to take a while before we find out what's going on, but the latest information definitely has voice conversations with the tower and letting them know that they're having issues and they were on their way back to the airport. So prayers for all the friends and family who loved Greg Biffle and his friend Cletus, who is a YouTube star who they started doing things together over a year ago, posted a wonderful, wonderful video. It was almost 45 minutes long about his friendship and relationship with Greg. As he used to end everything with "Do it for Dale," and that was Dale Earnhardt. Well, his latest now is he's changed that. It's "Do it for Dale, be like Biff." And the "be like Biff" really refers to all the charity work that Greg Biffle has done through his entire life. So, like I said, do it for Dale, be like Biff. Well, this is the final show of 2025. We'll talk about what's happening in 2026, and there are, folks, before you know it, it is going to be the week of January 16th, and that officially kicks everything off with the Barrett Jackson Rock the Block Cole Swindell concert out at Westworld. Now, that's a separate ticket. Your ticket into Barrett Jackson does not get you into the concert and the event, and then that kicks off a whole group of car events, auctions, and some events are free. Some events you have to buy a ticket for, but the big one is Barrett Jackson, and that's going to run from the 17th through the 25th at Westworld of Scottsdale. And over the next couple of weeks, I'll have some more details about some of the cool cars and some of the special things that will be happening out at Barrett-Jackson. But you've got all sorts of free events, from the Saturday Night Shine to the Espressos and Engines, events for strictly air-cooled cars, Mesa Cars and Coffee, the Car Week Edition, British Bikes, Muscle Cars in Mesa. There's going to be a meetup at the Penske Auto Museum, which is in Scottsdale. And then you have the Arizona Concours d'Elegance at Scottsdale Civic Park. You have all sorts of events and drives. And then you get into some of the other auctions. You have the Bonham Auction, which is going to be at the Western Carolin, and that's the 22nd and 23rd. You have the R.M. Sotheby Auction, and that is going to be the 22nd and 23rd as well. You also have a couple events after this, February 14th, the Concours in the Hills, which is out in Fountain Hills, and then you have the Copper State 1000. The Concours in the Hills is on February 14th, and that's a Saturday, and then you have April 12th, you have the Copper 1000 kickoff, which is a tour around Arizona. So if you want some more information about these car events, it's really easy. Go to arizonacarweek.org, arizonacarweek.org, and you'll get all the information you're looking for. Take advantage of this. There's so many great events, so many cool cars to see, and there's some things that you have to buy a ticket for, but there's plenty of things that are free. Gas prices. Yeah, with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $2.82 a gallon. That's right, $2.82. Arizona, our average gas price is hovering at $3 a gallon, $3.04. New Mexico, $2.59. Colorado, $2.38. They're knocking on the door of getting close to $2 a gallon in Colorado. Utah, $2.63. Nevada, $3.40. California, $4.28. And you head over to Oklahoma, $2.24 a gallon average gas price in Oklahoma, $2.40 in Texas. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices around the state of Arizona. Well, I don't think in recent memory that I can remember gas prices being so inexpensive. If you're going to be in Littlefield, Arizona, at the TA Express, $2.08 a gallon. That's right, $2.08 a gallon. The Arco Station on Speedway Boulevard in Tucson at $2.15. The Costco on Tucson Marketplace at $2.17. And the Costco in Marana at $2.27. So the gas, well, it's very cheap headed if you're down south in the Tucson area. Let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Well, the Far East Valley definitely has the best gas prices that we're seeing right now. The 76 station on Old West Highway in Apache Junction, how about $2.69 a gallon? The In the Zone on North 32nd Street in Phoenix, $2.69. That's cash price. The Marathon Station in Apache Junction, $2.69. The Quick Trip in Apache Junction, $2.69. How about $2.74 at Sam's Club on Rio Salado Parkway in Tempe? The Walmart in Scottsdale on Northside Boulevard, $2.75. The Costco in North Scottsdale at $2.75. So definitely, there's plenty of gas out there right now under $3 a gallon, folks, and it is incredible. I haven't seen gas prices like this in a long, long time. So enjoy it, and a late Christmas present, and a nice present to go into 2026. Well, we've come to that time of the show, time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I recently visited a major national oil chain business, and I was shocked to see them run a hose down my dipstick tube and suck the oil out. This is in lieu of removing the oil plug at the bottom of the pan and letting the oil drain out. Well, they said they do that now because of aluminum oil pans. I think they're scared of stripping the threads on the plug. Of course, they had to answer every question I asked, and still feeling like they can't get all the sludge out. What do you think of this shortcut in car care. Well, I'm all for it. And generally speaking, as long as you have a car with a dipstick, some newer cars have sensors instead. So this is a good way to change your oil. And you're right. They are afraid of stripping out the plug in your oil pan. And they should be. Even if they notice when it happens and they confess it to you, it's a time-consuming expense for both of you. And if you fail to notice that you've stripped the pan, well, then you're going to have to deal with the consequences of it being stripped. And that becomes an expense for you the next time you try to get your oil changed. Now, while all the guys at our shop are great people, and I love them to death, but not many of them miss the cut for going to medical school. So doing some of this is human error and risk is also a good idea. It's also a good idea in medicine, and I trust they're doing that as well. Now, these oil exchange machines make it possible to strip the oil pan. Make it impossible to strip the oil pan, regardless of the skill or lack of skill of the technician. They've also eliminated spilling oil, which can get caught in the pan underneath the car where the oil is drained. This also eliminates the burnt arm hair when you loosen the drain plug and hot sludge juice of oil pours down your arm and on your way to your elbow, your armpit, and potentially, eventually, your shorts. Now, guess what? The machines, they're faster too, which is good for business and good for you if you're waiting. And it does, now, does it get to the sludge at the bottom of the oil pan? Does it get that out? Well, you really shouldn't have sludge in the bottom of your oil pan. If you do, you've been taking very poor care of your car for a very long time. Plus, the sludge, it's not going to drain out through the oil pan either. It's going to sit at the bottom of the oil pan in either method. So that's really not an issue. So these machines work well, Jeffrey. And aside from the investment the shop has to make in the machine, this is a shortcut that really has no downside and has plenty of upside. Well, I can tell you this. This is a method that, frankly, I'm not very familiar with. The shop that I work with and that does my work, and I work part-time there, we do not have one of these machines that sucks the oil out of the car itself. So we're still doing the traditional way where we are loosening the drain plug to drain the oil out of the vehicle. But I agree with the guys here at Car Talk. This is a situation where this is a good idea, especially if your car does have a dipstick tube and you can utilize that to suck the oil out of the car. It definitely makes sense. It seems like it has the potential to save a lot of time and money, and that's a good idea. Well, that's all the time we have for the car show, folks. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.